Hi, you may know me as Tom Baker, the fourth Doctor Who. And when I'm not busy killing Daleks or other garbage can shaped aliens, or knitting a new scarf, I'm helping out shows like Current Geek by giving them a little money each month through their Patreon at patreon.com/frogpants. If you like Current Geek and you'd like to see it continue, well then by gum, throw them a little cash. That by gum part was kind of my British Doctor Who thing. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening, and don't forget, when you've got a special space screwdriver time thing, you can do anything. So help this show at patreon.com/frogpants.
I have
Current Geek!
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world, and you, to keep you current on all the things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. That's Tom Merritt.
Hey, Scott Johnson.
What's going on, man? How are you?
It's Friday. It must be Current Geek.
It is. It's the day, one of the days I look most forward to during this week, and or any week, really. It's a chance for us to get together and talk about all this nerdy crap that happened while we were not paying attention, or maybe we were, I guess. I don't know. But we get to flesh it out. We get to fillet this fish.
We are going to dig into it like Long John Silver digs into a fried piece of whitefish.
That is way too long of a description, but it'll look good on our tombstone. We always have guests, and today I am really stoked about today's guest because not only is it a good guest, but it's a guest that I think a lot of people will be surprised we nailed and got. And I'm going to tell you who he is right now. You know him probably best as Dr. Rodney McKay. From that show, Stargate Atlantis, and SG-1 for that matter. Maybe you know him as the pilot that spread the monkey flu in Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Or maybe even Howard from that one episode of the Edison Twins in 1985. Oh. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the program. David Hewlett, hello.
There's an intro. Destroy the planet and Edison Twins, all in the same sentence.
Well, I figured I had an opportunity there to pull out your first role as listed on IMDb. Is it accurate? Is that your first role?
It's yes. It was. I actually auditioned for one of the Edison Twins and was disappointed to get Howard the Bully.
Oh, man. I was looking at some photos. You were, we were all a little younger and...
A lot of hair ago.
Well, you went from Howard the Bully to the smartest man on earth. It's not a bad rise.
Yes. Not too bad at all. It's really
and now
good.
I'm starving. All of your fish references. I feel like I should be eating while we do it.
I kind of made myself hungry doing that. Yeah. Sorry about that.
And I should have mentioned one of the nice things about David is he's not only this sort of icon to nerds everywhere, especially when it comes to anybody who's got any fandom for the Stargate series, which I definitely do, but... You're a nerd in your own right. You like all this stuff we're into. You're into it, man.
I don't just play a geek on TV.
All right. That's fair. I like it. Well, I'm super stoked to have you here. We got a bunch of stuff to get through. Tom, let's take it from the top with this to start us off.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Thomas.
As do the people on our subreddit. Thanks to everybody who submits stories for the show there at Current Geek. reddit.com. If you haven't gone there, you should, even if it's just a look. But while you're there, might as well vote, because that helps us pick the stories every week. Another Jay Martin posted the story that Apple computer inventor Steve Wozniak is going to be doing a reality show with Mythbuster Carrie Byron, or former Mythbuster Carrie Byron. The show will be called The Woz, featuring Steve testing futuristic gadgets in labs across the world.
Is it TV? Is it web? Like, do
it's
we know?
TV.
Oh, wow. All right. So it's the
How
first.
How bizarre is that?
It is pretty bizarre. I mean, it's the first of, I want to say, yeah, I think it is the first official big project from the ex-Mythbusters, those that were let go, the B team. And I will watch this, I suppose. I can't think of any reason I wouldn't, but... It does
at least
seem
he's not renovating his house or something.
Right.
we're not going to see the Woz drunk and hanging out at bars and stuff.
Well, right. I was thinking of that. It's like the Osbournes, the Wozniaks.
That's it.
Oh, I would watch that. If everybody
I could project. Recompile that in 10 seconds.
He'd spend all the time traveling on a Segway and that kind of thing. It'd be great.
I'm just amazed he's doing it. Like, I don't understand what the appeal. Isn't this what he does anyways? I mean...
Well, they're making a show out of it then, I guess. Like, I guess he does do this. The question will there be sort of extreme testing happening? Because if you're going to bring Carrie in there, it seems like mm-hmm. her her, you know, pedigree with what's gone on Mythbusters is to say, well, let's blow some of things, these things up, or take them to extremes. And who knows what that means? Because that doesn't seem...
That was the pitch, basically. It's like, well, we got the Woz. He finds exciting stuff, and then Carrie goes and blows it up.
Well, yeah. I mean, it definitely can't be, hey, the Woz picked up a new tablet today. Let's see how it handles Word or Excel. Like it.
No, they're going to be doing things like going into the lab in Silicon Valley that's making the hoverboard, for instance, right?
Right.
And it's going to be like Carrie showing you like how it works and Woz riding it around and putting it through its tests and vice versa. Like it's going to be stuff like that. They're going to be partnering up with these different labs because they put in the press release like the companies that are making sci-fi real today. So it's all going to be whiz bang stuff.
Mm. And right. Do we have a network? Do we know where this is going to air?
Is it Discovery?
Is it? I think it is. Yeah. A Discovery. Here it is.
I saw the tweets. Like he put out this sort of series of tweets talking about pitching, which to me is just so funny that the Woz is at network saying, "Hey guys, you want to make this TV series?" It's like
it's Mythbusters meets me.
Can't he just do that himself?
Yeah. No, it looks like they pitched it to Discovery, according to Gizmodo. Mm. I don't know if that means Discovery has picked it up yet.
Seems like it has a decent chance, although I don't know what the circumstances were regarding the letting go of the three B-teamers on Mythbusters, but one would assume that the relationship is still okay, and you know, if the deal was right, that they would be interested in bringing her back on in this way, and you'd already have kind of a stable of viewers who would recognize her and
oh sure
jump on board. So
you've covered a couple of age groups there, definitely. You know, yeah. You've got the other thing, I guess, is that someone like the Woz, people who still watch television will watch the Woz.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I find it very weird calling him the Woz, but it sounds like I know him or something. But,
right.
Just that I think they're so television is so desperate to find people who still watch television.
Yeah.
You know, he hits that age group. And then I guess they figure Carrie Byron will bring in the Mythbusters crowd, right? Which is a little younger.
And a very
everything they touch is gold.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Like,
insane. And when you're like, why would Wozniak do this? I have exactly the same question, but I guess the answer is when Carrie Byron stops by and says, "Hey, want to do a TV show with you?" Who wouldn't say yes?
That's true. Yes. Good point.
Yeah.
Good point.
I don't know how they turn it down. I think it'd be a lot of fun. And I hope, you know, one would hope anyway, that his eccentricities toward technology and his excitement that you always hear about would be chief among the things on display here. Because what reality show is any good if people aren't being a little goofy and, you know, a little out there? And he's a little out there in all the good ways. So, yeah, this is all good. I'll sit down.
Yeah, I mean, I'm there. I'll watch it for sure.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny to me. I had this stupid theory that, you know, that reality television was just going to be on the web. And because who would want to watch reality television on televisions? And it's gone the complete opposite.
Yeah, it is.
That all this reality stuff is on television, on broadcast television.
Well, that's why my mind jumped right to web series, because I just thought, well, this isn't going to be a thing they would do on TV.
Well, that's interesting. Like, okay, they pitched it to Discovery. Let's say Discovery hasn't taken it. Does an Amazon or a Netflix or somebody like that? Because they've all steered clear of reality shows up until this point.
Well, Netflix has started doing documentaries, but
right. Not that's as close as they've gotten. Yeah.
Sure. And if there was enough of a science spin on this, that could attract somebody like Netflix, because they do seem to want to steer away. I mean, they have plenty of archival stuff that you would consider kind of reality television TLC junk, but why not spruce up the joint by having something a little more scientific on display?
Because it is not, as we mentioned, the Wozborns.
No, it's not. Yeah, the Woz. Well,
who knows? See how the ratings go. They may have
to make season two.
Well, the article itself has some ideas for the name, like Woz Up or Woz Knows Best.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. And it, like you say, calling him the Woz feels a little... It's like us introducing you today as like D-Hugh or something.
D-Hugh.
And Skojo.
Yeah.
Although I have that irritating habit of signing my emails Hewlett. It was a thing. It was like a high school thing for us. We always referred to each other as our last names. It was like a British thing or some sort. So
we did that in my high school, which is so not British, Southern Illinois. It was always Jergena, Merritt, Hutchinson.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Yeah. Sounds like a law firm.
It's like 50 Davids.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds 50. Like an odd law firm I'd need to go to if I had been in an accident.
You need the services of Jurgen Amerit and Hutchinson.
So if NASA's not landing on asteroids or sending people to the moon, what are they up to today, Tom?
Well, today they did a 4.5-hour test flight of the Orion capsule, which was super successful. Minor glitches, nothing bad. But Deba Singh let us know that NASA announced it's developing the capability to send humans to an asteroid by 2025. So the Orion capsule launched today was the first step in that. They want to hit Mars sometime in the 2030s. NASA also explained in this press release that it has been sending robots to Mars for more than 40 years now, so it's time to get some humans there to figure out if life can survive on the red planet. And they want to send a robotic mission to capture and redirect an asteroid to orbit the moon and then send astronauts to explore the said asteroid. That threw me off.
Yeah.
Definitely the whole idea of redirecting asteroids, it just sounds like a bad idea.
You just don't want them to get the trajectory angle wrong. Oops. On that redirecting an asteroid step.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I've seen Armageddon. I know how bad it can go.
Yeah, it's like every plot of every science fiction movie made we'll just redirect this asteroid around the moon.
Yeah.
NASA says, oops.
Oops. Yeah, deep impact. Here we come.
It's crazy that they could even contemplate this.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I was bitching on YouTube the other day about the fact where's all of our space exploration? Why aren't there men on the moon and all this stuff? And it's like they listened.
Yeah. And it's the answer to that question, obviously, the problem for me is timing. I feel like we should have been there like as a kid. All right. And then let's say 82 to 85. I was the kind of person that believed in his heart of hearts that we would be on the moon living there well before 2000. And maybe by then we'd have people on Mars. And
Popular Science had it on the cover of their magazine.
Sure. I mean, everybody told me this, hover cars and spaceships, it was all happening. And then to tell me now that 2025 and maybe 2030s, somewhere in the 2030s, that is well beyond at least what I had assumed was going to happen.
Did you all see XKCD today?
No.
It's called On the Moon. And essentially it's like, if we could land a man on the moon, why can't we? And the other person interrupts and says, land a man on the moon.
That's about right. It's just frustrating.
It's so true, though. I mean, my frustration was just that there was such a race to get to the moon. It was such a politically charged move, basically. It was science based entirely on politics.
Yeah.
And I was sort of happy to hear... Well, I mean, not happy, but that, you know, Russia had sort of threatened that they were going to be there with a moon base. And all of a sudden, I felt that America sort of kicked in and started going like, hey, wait a second, we're about to lose a race again.
You know? I got to tell you, though, there is a part of me right now that is freaking out listening to the disembodied voice of Dr. Rodney McKay talk about interplanetary space travel in a very, like, you know, proglomatic sort of, we're just sort of talking about it as if we're sort of sitting around a table, but that's a weird experience for me. I didn't expect to have that moment, but there it was.
You wouldn't want to go with me because you know something's going to go wrong, basically.
Well, and also you would make the argument, though, or at least your character would have. You would have stood up and stood your ground and not given an inch, which is one of the things that was easy to admire about Dr. McKay.
And then whined and complained the entire time.
Exactly.
It's uncomfortable in the Orion capsule.
Exactly. That's it. I'm not going up to some Russian moon base. It's going to be horrible.
Yeah, but you had some badass tablets before there were tablets, and that was something else.
The tablet thing was always so funny to me because these poor guest stars would come in and try to use the pen that came with it.
Mm-hmm.
There were these little dangly pens that hung off. And I refused. I was always like, no, you use your fingers.
Yeah.
In the future, we're all going to use our fingers.
That was so forward thinking. It's amazing.
I was so happy that I actually, you know. Of course, the problem being that you couldn't actually run any of those Windows tablets by hitting it with your fingers.
Right.
The poor IT nerds would come running out and go,
sued Apple for prior art.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Everybody else does. Why not David Hewlett?
Exactly.
I'll give it a go.
Yeah.
Hey, Sean Burnett sent us the news that a forward-thinking soul named Jordan Brecken may probably, at least as far as we know, be the first person to get a tattoo based on the next Star Wars movie. IO9 reports Brecken Instagrammed a picture of a brand new tattoo on his arm of the ball droid from the Star Wars The Force Awakens trailer. Brecken may also be the first person to get a tattoo based on a teaser trailer, but this remains unverified. To quote IO9, let's hope this droid doesn't end up killing Han Solo.
There's also a theory rolling around that droid transforms into a normal cylindrical droid when it's not running. Like, in other words, this is a mode of transport, but when it's holding still, it's not that.
It becomes trash can droid again?
Yeah, I guess so. Trash can droid.
Why the droid? Like, of all the things you could choose to, like, why would you get the droid on your arm or whatever?
I'll tell you
what.
I don't even know
what
he's got it,
actually. Yeah, what's
the theory?
What's your theory?
There was a leak of this droid before the teaser trailer.
Yeah.
He went and got the tattoo set up before it came out so that he could be like on it.
Oh.
So for 1 week, he was the coolest guy.
Yeah. I was going to say, because now it's a little too cute for that guy. You know what I mean? Like it's,
yeah,
it's
what if he talks? Yeah. What if he talks like Jar Jar Binks or something?
Right. Oh,
we don't
dude.
Know.
We hope not. Let's
you think
not.
There's somebody out there right now who got Jar Jar put on their arm before the film came out
and then just never admitted it.
That's it.
Think about it. When you were pitched the idea of Jar Jar, it was actually kind of cool because it was this fully realized CG character. That was kind of a thing you hadn't seen much of in movies, and it was right there with the people, and people were interacting with him and touching him, and he could touch back, and it felt very real. And that may have seemed like a thing to tie your wagon to.
But, it's like, show us on the puppet where Jar Jar touched you.
right.
Show us on the Jar Jar puppet.
Show us on the Gungan. Yeah. Anyway, I think this guy is fine for doing that. And you know what? The droid, I mean, the movies are famous for the droids being the humor or the sort of the comedy element of these films. I think to assume that that wouldn't be the case here, like we were suddenly going to get super serious droids, is probably a mistake. So if he got it, he probably is just fine with droids. That's good.
I don't know. There's no picture that I can think of that I would want on my wall for the rest of my life, let alone on my body. I'm completely anti tattoos.
I am too. Yeah. Not because I don't think they're cool or can't be. I know I'm going to get sick of it. Like,
yeah.
I just know it. And it doesn't matter what it is. It could be the coolest thing ever. It would almost have to be, I don't know, like I would have had to have been in a nuclear blast and the flash of another person's body got tattooed on me. And then at least it'd be a cool thing to show off.
That's the other thing is I have, given the way I'm aging, God knows what my body in any area is going to look like. So
the singularity
ball
is
droid,
near.
Yeah.
The ball droid. Tattoos. Next thing you know, it's a Death Star.
Right. The drooping droid on David Hewlett's left.
Orb a pear that is sphere.
It's a bad idea. Yeah. Don't,
right, I've got a new sub segment for us, Scott.
Oh my gosh. Hold on. Okay. I got a theme for it. You ready?
Okay.
It's for the internet sweetheart, Veronica Belmont, saying,
how about a booby?
There you go. Go.
Castapalooza. We have so much casting news for various things. Deep Ascension Theater Monkey submitted most of these. Movies based on comic books still do require human actors. So we've got a roundup of this week's Marvel and DC casting. Marvel Studios confirming Benedict Cumberbatch will play Dr. Stephen Strange. Deadline says Kristen Ritter will star in Netflix's Jessica Jones. Ryan Reynolds is a go as Deadpool for Fox. And finally, the cast of the Suicide Squad is Jared Leto, the Joker, Will Smith, Deadshot, Tom Hardy as Rick Flagg, Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn, Jay Courtney as Boomerang, Cara Delevingne as the Enchantress, Jesse Eisenberg still in negotiations on Lex Luthor, and a lot of people want Oprah for the pivotal role of Amanda Waller because you get a supervillain and you get a supervillain and you get a supervillain.
Amanda Waller, better known for those not in the know or not in the DC side of things, she's basically she's like head of S.H.I.E.L.D., but for their version of that. And so she's kind of a big deal. She's like, what's his name? Samuel L. Jackson's character. My mind.
Nick Fury.
Nick Fury. She's the Nick Fury of the DC universe.
It's like Oprah with an iPad.
Yeah, basically, which would be fine. She should do that. This is interesting. Let's talk about that Benedict Cumberbatch call.
That's the one I like.
Yeah. So
that's the one I really care. I'm a huge Doctor Strange fan.
Yeah.
Cumberbatch will just knock it out of the park.
So we were thinking about this a couple of months ago when it was being rumored. And David, do you think is there a better pick or did they just nail who we needed for the role?
Honestly, I think you could give Cumberbatch anything.
Yeah.
The guy is so, I just hate his guts so much. He's so talented.
Yeah.
And he's got such an amazing look and he's played so many amazing characters. I just think that, you know, if you're going to go with Doctor Strange, you can't. Can you? I can't think of anybody else who could do it.
No, I was even trying to go back to say, all right, well, let's look at some actors who are maybe aged out of it now, but in their heyday, would they have been good? And I couldn't even think of anybody there.
Maybe Ralph Fiennes?
Maybe.
Even, it's hard to know.
There's a Voldemort parallel
there. But you need that tall, dark, forbidding... Uh-huh. thing. And Cumberbatch has that in spades and is just easy.
I'm thinking like a Christoph Waltz, but he doesn't fit the physical.
No. Form. Plus, plus the way he acts is less. I don't know. I you need that brooding thing. Even
it
if
gives a weight to it, I think.
Sure.
Right. Right.
I would worry about. I don't feel it's he's completely accurate by the comic book standards because he was supposed to be. I mean, he was basically supposed to be this incredible, you know, handsome, square jawed, sort of superhero like guy in a way. He's. Mm. He just had the mustache.
Yeah.
I think that Cumberbatch sort of gives like a nice sort of quirkiness to it. It bodes well for the show, I think.
Sure. Does he keep the accent? I know he can fake a good American accent, but does he keep it? I think he should keep it.
I'd like to see the English accent.
Yeah.
The real question here that we're avoiding is, have we reached peak Cumberbatch?
No.
Potentially.
No.
He has a coloring book.
Oh, he does? Oh, wait.
I saw it in a magazine the other day, but that he's got his own coloring book. Yeah, of anybody I'm most jealous, I think, of him.
Wow.
Yeah, we are in danger of exhausting the world's supply of Benedict Cumberbatch. Yeah.
It's true, though. It is like, he is like everywhere right now.
Yeah. It's insane.
The thing is, he's not being given bad projects and he's not putting in any hacked, crappy performances. So I suppose it's fine for the foreseeable future, as long as he doesn't make any major missteps. And we say this about a lot of people. There was a time and a place where Kevin Costner could do no wrong. Now, in my mind, he never has, because I love Kevin Costner and I'll love him till the day he dies. But, you know, people like to start giving him crap right around the Postman days and things like that. And, or Waterworld, which I still maintain is a
Robin,
really...
Robin Hood for me.
Oh, yeah. Robin Hood was that was a bad moment.
Such a mistake.
Okay, I give you that.
You know, Robert Downey Jr., he would have been good.
Oh, yeah. He would have been fine.
Right.
He would have actually been very close to the comic book. But again,
no,
I feel
Iron
like...
Man, then definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, there's no way they do it now because clearly he's Tony Stark in every way and he's in the same universe, so he can't really do it. But if he had been untapped and people were unaware of what he could do with a good goatee...
Could Cusack get away with it? Or is he too nice?
Zach, I don't think he's got... I don't know.
Yeah, I always think amazing. For some reason in my head, I always pair John Cusack and Robert Downey Jr. as sort of like the antimatter. Like if they ever met, they'd explode.
Like they can't touch each other in regular space, or they'll like time cop. They'll just turn into purple goo and disappear.
Okay. Way to get the time cop reference.
Well, anytime I can, I try to sneak that one in.
It's so rare that it comes up. You really want to jump on that.
And our job is done. Thanks, everyone. Yeah,
never put Ron Silver in the same room with himself is what I learned from that movie. Anyway, well, it's all very exciting, but you also got this other stuff. So people not familiar with Suicide Squad, it's basically a team of villains. Some you would consider supervillains, like, I think, you know, the Joker fits in that, but others are kind of anti-heroes and more kind of misunderstood and sometimes are again, with the law and against the law. I would say probably, Deadshot would fall into that category. Harley Quinn is just kind of following the Joker around, but these characters are very interesting, and the Suicide Squad series from DC has always been very good. It's very interesting stuff, and it's fun to watch the bad guys try to do paid work for the good guys to mixed results. And this is kind of a big cast, at least from the Will Smith, Jared Leto, and Tom Hardy perspective.
Yeah, I'm amazed.
Yeah, Tom Hardy. I mean, you know, he's Bane, but he's enough of a mask in that Batman movie that I don't think we're going to have any problems with him being somebody else. It'll be a bit like, what's his name playing, Johnny Storm and, Captain America. Can't think of his name all of a sudden.
It shoots in Toronto.
Yeah. Yeah. See everything.
So I'm going to be wandering the streets trying to mistakenly wander into shots.
Just poke a little extra in there.
Oh, am I in Suicide Squad now? Oops.
Sorry. That guy with the monkey flubes in our shot again. Cut. yeah.
You know, Brandon Jensen on Twitter points out that this is DC essentially making their Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Oh, good point.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, they're definitely villains though. I mean, that's the one difference.
But are they going dark with it? I mean, is it going to be like is it going to be moody and grim?
Or? Well, I hope so. Cause the comic is, and there are people die in that comic.
Yeah. I never read it, to be honest.
Sure. Sure. And it's a thing. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of things you could say about it, a lot of different runs and stuff, but it's something Batman would not approve of. Let's put it that way.
Batman would not approve.
Yeah, he would let everybody live. Superman would definitely not approve. But yeah, it's their chance to get a little edgy maybe. And they've already said out loud that they don't want to be goofy in their hero movies the way that Marvel is. They don't want to be as lighthearted. This is a chance for them to show just how dark they want to get. So I think this will be the litmus test. We're not going to get it till 2016. So
The darkness is fine. I feel like, in a way, because these films are so big and they have to appeal to so many people, I feel that even when they go dark, they run the risk of becoming, you know, parodies of themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, Batman, to me, by the end of it, Gutthorne's like, all right, already. Everyone's really depressed. Got it.
And they have to reset that every time. And they usually, I think we're done. Long gone are even the Tim Burton days where Batman was a little lighthearted. I don't think we get that anymore. I think they're done.
But it's interesting. I love seeing the progression of these things, like how, and it basically mirrors what you're seeing in the comic books themselves. And when you look back at the original comics for a lot of these things, how sort of naive, I guess they seem. And then as they get older, they get more grim and darker. And I just read this a little bit off topic, sorry, but I just read this amazing series, which I'm sure everyone's already read because it's old, but Lock and Key.
Lock and Key is insanely good. Oh my gosh.
I think it honestly rivals some of the best books I've ever read.
I completely agree. Yep.
I was depressed, but at the end of it, because it was just over.
Yeah, I don't want it to be done. That's Stephen King's son wrote all that, which is
Joe Hill.
Yeah, that guy's got it, man. Like, really has a unique voice. That is a seriously. I mean, there was a TV show that was like pitched, and then a pilot, and then nobody wanted it, and now I don't know where that thing is in limbo. But man, if somebody can do proper treatment to that thing,
Man. Yeah, it's perfect. It's absolutely, and it's doable. Like, I feel like I can see all the effects in that.
Sure.
It's a grim, grim series. My son is sort of haunted by it because I won't let him even look at the pictures. So he sort of follows me around waiting for me to put it down.
Yeah. The art is amazing.
I can't remember the guy's name, but he.
Such a weird choice too. Like such a strange style that just totally works. And you're not wrong about this. Actually, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you this question. If there were to be a comic movie adaptation of some sort, and you could just say, yep, I'm going to be, that's the role I'm going to get. What would you want it to be?
Wow. And from a comic book standpoint.
Yeah.
That's Swamp Thing.
Oh, dude, that's great.
I love Swamp Thing. I mean, that's the stupidest, as an actor, it's the dumbest thing to say because you're like, you're in full costume. But I just, that character was just absolutely perfect to me.
Yeah. That's
my friend I don't know whether he's still working on it or did work on it, how it worked, but Vincenzo Natale, the guy who did Cube, had some kind of a connection with Swamp Thing for a while there.
Mm.
But I just loved him, like the Alan Moore stuff.
Oh yeah, there's nothing like that. That series is amazing.
Well, and the original one as well. But the way he became this creature that could, he was almost like a spiritual thing. It was just to this day I as a Valentine's Day card for my girlfriend in high school, I cut up this old. Swamp Thing comic book and made a, and I will never forgive her for that.
That is maybe the greatest thing a guest has ever told us.
That's awesome.
That is way cool. Very nice.
By the way, Gabriel Rodriguez.
Oh, Gabriel who?
Gabriel Rodriguez is the artist on Lock.
Oh, that's it.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So good.
And the way they'll suddenly switch from this very sort of dark graphic novel stuff to like Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah.
Which makes it even more creepy in some way.
Yeah, it is a very weird mix of style and I don't know. I don't even know if I'd call it horror or not. Some people put it in that category, and I guess there's some horrifying things about it. But to me, it's more like a twist on Twilight Zone or something. It's a very different kind of comic book, and one that people are going to miss if they just kind of scoff at indie titles and just think, oh, here's just yet another weird story that isn't a cape and cowl type comic book. They're so missing out on that thing.
Yeah. Everyone should basically run out and get that series right now. Yeah. It's like honestly, it's the best read you'll have. And I had nightmares.
Yeah.
Like it's not, as you say, it's not horror, but it reminded me of, it was almost like Jekyll and Hyde. It was almost like, turn of the century horror in that it's about, it's so, it's so internal.
Yeah.
Like it's like the horror of parenting and the horror of being a child and the horror of high school. And it's just all this, it's the stuff in Stephen King that I most appreciate.
Yeah. And it sticks with you. It really stays.
Yeah.
I remember for days just going, you know, wow, I should
those
probably.
Keys, yeah. The keys that open up your head and the, oh,
it's just. I was going to say, Scott lost his keys for a week after that.
And my license. moving on, Tom, let's talk about the Sony Pictures deal.
Yeah, man. Talk about creepy and supervillains. Sony Pictures Entertainment has had a rotten couple of weeks. If you haven't been following this, some people attacked their internal systems, broke in, wiped out data, locked up their email for more than a week. Surprise Truck posted the story about the things that have been released from the attack. Data stolen and released online includes movie budgets, payroll data, salary information for 6,800 global employees, social security numbers for more than 47,000 employees, healthcare files, unreleased films, home addresses and contacts for Sony Pictures employees and freelancers. And there's more than that. Sony says it will offer a year of free credit monitoring and fraud protection to current and former employees. And then just this afternoon, a threatening email purportedly on behalf of the attackers was sent to Sony Pictures Entertainment employees. So it's not even over yet.
So did they all get, everyone got the email?
It was a mass email. I can't say for sure that every single person got it, but one would assume that since they have all the emails now that they just sent it to every email they have.
So I'm very curious about the perspective of somebody who's worked within the Hollywood system and understands kind of how these things go and, you know, the business of entertainment and that sort of thing. So David, this whole thing must seem just crazy.
It's bizarre to me. Actually, it was my wife who pointed out. I didn't even notice it, basically. And I sort of, because I've heard so much about their Sony network with the PlayStation, I was sort of bored of hearing about Sony getting hacked.
Sure.
And I just didn't realize how huge this was. I mean, this is spreadsheets of the top executive salaries where you can, and they're right away, people are nailing them for the fact that, you know, women are getting paid less than men, that 98% of whatever the execs are white. You know, there's just this, I mean, it's already being analyzed by the world, and it's just like, it's truly embarrassing.
Yeah. I mean, for Sony, obviously, right? But for, geez, for everybody. And
for the people who work there.
Sure. And they're acting like they're holding on to a ton of this stuff, right, Tom? Like they've still got way more.
Yeah, nobody knows exactly how much they got. I mean, there's some curious things about this. It's very similar to an attack on Saudi Aramco in 2012, similar to an attack in South Korea last year on several businesses. And the MO of the attacks, they can't tell if it's the same group or groups that are imitating each other. But the MO is they prepare for the attack in advance. They compile the code very close to the attack. They unleash it. They make vague statements with demands that aren't very well formulated. They time it near some sort of politically sensitive event. In this case, it's the release of The Interview, the movie about North Korea that North Korea has objected to. And then they disappear shortly thereafter, but they're also destructive. Most hacks want to steal information and not be detected, so they don't leave any trail. They don't delete anything. They went in and wiped hard drives. Like, there's some data that they may never get back. They may not be able to recover. And at the same time, they're releasing troves and troves of data online that are going to cause people to have to move house, right? Because they're celebrities who might get targeted if people know where they live.
Yeah, there was the entire budget for The Interview was out there. I mean, with salaries and again, the people immediately start analyzing this stuff. I mean, I don't know what the legality of it is. There's actually sites up there that are showing the stuff that's being, you know, they're trolling through this stuff and bringing it up and sort of publishing little articles about what it means and such. I mean, it's from an industry standpoint. I mean, Hollywood is all about perception. I mean, it's how you are seen by the rest of the world, and that's all very carefully managed, and that's become very difficult now that the internet is what the internet is. But this is extraordinary because especially after Sony has had so many of these issues with their PlayStation network.
Yeah, so the games division, which obviously is separate from Columbia and everything else, Columbia Pictures and whatever, as separate as that is, and as much as the twain may never actually meet, it doesn't matter. The brand on this is Sony, and it does seem, we were talking about this earlier in the week, Tom, it does seem like a problem for Sony from a PR perspective, regardless of what department is hit or not.
Well, think about each one of those those people have had so much information released at this point that there could be whole other separate repercussions on an individual basis as well. I mean, you're saying people are getting threatening emails individually as well. Well, they've got access to all of this information.
Yeah.
I mean,
There's all kinds of things. There's the press in general that we're all going to think of Sony as the place that gets hacked. There's the press specifically about certain contracts that say this or that or salaries. There's legal implications where if someone wants to build a case of prejudice against them because of their gender, they need evidence. Now there's a big trove of evidence that they could potentially use for all kinds of things.
Well, there's emails about Adam Sandler films, like being by the very Sony execs that are greenlighting them.
There's going to be a lot of uncomfortable meetings happening.
Yeah,
I think it's a sign of the times in that we're looking at huge numbers of credit cards being hacked. Banks are being targeted. This is the future of crime. I mean, it's, as you say, talk about supervillains. There was a guy who was recently taken out. I can't remember the details of it, but he was threatening the president. He was opening people's emails, and it turns out he was some like out of work carpenter in like the Ukraine or something, who had no computer skills at all, was just picking up sort of malware and stuff on the internet and reading the instructions. Mm-hmm. And there's no cost to this stuff. To the people who are actually committing these intrusions, what's the big deal? You get caught, what do you get? You know what I mean?
Well, what it'll do, I hope, and the theory is in my head, at least the positive outlook on this, is that this just drives innovation and security and will drive people to not just become more secure, but also big behemoth companies who are set in 100 years of structure and systematic ways of doing things, maybe they start to have to be a little more transparent about the things they can be. Maybe Sony doesn't, and I'm not saying Sony's at fault here or that they should have been targeted or any of that. I'm sure if you went and hacked Universal or Fox or anybody else, you'd find a lot of embarrassing information, regardless of who gets attacked. So this isn't really even about Sony to me, but it just seems like the world has got to start preparing itself for being more transparent on a lot of levels so that they can have more focused security in areas where you really need it. And then things like whether or not, Seth Rogen made a little bit more than what's his face on the movie is just a thing everyone knows already. Like, it doesn't need to be a big bombshell, or it doesn't need to be a big bombshell that Adam Sandler, the Adam Sandler movies are kind of crappy, but they make a bunch of money. Well, I think we all know that. But, they have to hide those memos and act like it's a big PR disaster if everyone ever heard a guy in a suit say that. And I guess I'm voting for better security, but a world that's a little less careful about every frickin' thing they say.
I think that's it. I think you have to assume that there is no anonymity. There's an anonymity to just not worrying about it, if that makes sense. If you're just being, as you say, transparent with this stuff, you don't have to worry about what gets dug up.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a really good point. And I want to combine that with a point we were making on Daily Tech News Show earlier today with Darren Kitchen, where we were talking about the fact that a lot of these companies have not properly spent the money to secure their data, because when you're spending money, you have to justify it, right? And you could look around and say, hey, nobody's actually stealing this stuff, so why are you spending so much money? Now they have an excuse. Now they have something to point to. And it's sad that it has to come to that for that to happen. But they can say, do you want us to be like Sony Pictures Entertainment, boss? No, I don't. We'll spend the money. And then you combine that with, but let's only focus on securing the things that really need to be. Like, in the past, it was like, secure it all because it doesn't cost much. Well, now it does. Mm-hmm. So you got to decide, like, what really does need to be protected? And there are definitely things that do. There are definitely sensitive things that you do need to protect. But let's focus on protecting just those.
There's this assumption
that this was all done electronically, and that's almost never the case. I mean, there are incredibly low tech, social engineering approaches to this stuff that will get you far further than any kind of, it's all seen as this sort of, oh, it's computer magic.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's just, it's old fashioned,
social engineering.
Sure. In this particular case, Sony has said, and I don't have the link, so I can't give an exact quote, but they basically said that there had to have been help on the inside. We don't know where it is.
I don't know if Sony said that.
I thought Sony said that, and then the anonymous group or the group claiming responsibility then reiterated it, like they would, of course, anyway. But
pretty sure Sony hasn't said anything like that. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, you could be right about that too.
And there was an analyst from Kaspersky who pointed out that they had the names of internal Sony servers before the attack was carried out,
and that was baked into the malware. Yeah.
Weird. Yeah, the whole thing is just crazy because I feel like it's one of those seismic moments that will change the way that industry and others connected to it, or even things completely unconnected to it, are going to see this and go, whoa.
Yeah, this is one of those seminal events that will change a lot of things for sure.
Yeah.
But and, I would have thought the PlayStation Network would have done that. I thought that was going to – because that just seemed like such an invasion. I mean, you've got cameras attached to those things. You've got credit card information, all sorts of stuff. You're dealing with children in many cases, you know?
Well, don't you think, Tom, maybe they probably – I mean, there is a big disconnect, and maybe that's part of the problem. But the connection between these divisions is not a solid connection.
Yeah, I shouldn't be making those.
Yeah, Sony Computers Entertainment got changed by that for sure. And network security for people logging in from outside definitely changed a lot after that. The difference is this was an internal attack and – a destructive one. Even the Sony computer one was not a destructive one. That was, they just stole data and made it public. This one, they destroyed data.
Yeah,
I even wonder if they did it to cover up. I mean, potentially that's it's possible that the malware was sent in afterwards to clean up after no one could figure out how they stole it.
Yeah, it's quite possible.
It would make
definitely makes the forensics harder.
It would make a movie. I mean, it'd be a hell of a movie, and maybe Sony shouldn't produce it, but...
I wonder if Sony can get the rights to it.
Oh, gosh, you know some executive somewhere within Sony Pictures Entertainment is like, look, it's an uncomfortable topic, but we own this story. We should be the ones to make it.
I love the idea of hacking movies, but they're just difficult, unless you set them on a spaceship.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if you don't have... Yeah, you need a big wormhole and you need some other... leave your brain at the door kinds of things to suspend.
Otherwise, it's just people tapping away at computers.
Oh, it's terrible. It'd be an awful movie. I've seen The Net. I see how bad it can be. It's a terrible movie.
What? Swordfish? You guys didn't like that?
Swordfish. You know what? Sneakers was all right. I'll give you that
Sneakers
one.
Sneakers was great. I love that film. Yeah. I didn't even mind Hackers, but that was Angelina Jolie.
So. Yeah, that's true. She had some...
War Games.
That's War Yes, of course. That's what got me interested in this stuff in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you could
right?
do If you could do a War Games version of this.
Yeah.
The problem is that it's the stakes, right? The stakes are really high if you work there. They don't feel as high if it's not destroying the entire world, which this is.
Yeah.
Right. That's true. By the way, speaking of War Games, these DDoS maps that people put together, these JavaScript HTML5 DDoS map things, which show where an attack is coming from in Asia or whatever and where it's hitting in the United States. It is so like War Games-y. I freaking love it. They're like little nuclear strikes just blowing up that half the country. It's amazing. Anyway.
And this is the new warfare, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think
this
you're
is
right.
probably more important than we should be spending a lot more money on this stuff than on missiles and stuff.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
On a lighter note,
oh, good.
Google is making it easier to tell you from a robot or a bot. New reCAPTCHA system. So instead of distorted words and numbers, users will simply click a checkbox next to the words, "I'm not a robot." And Google's advanced risk analysis will combine a ton of signals. They'll look at your IP address, any cookies you have set, your mouse movements, and more that they don't even want to say. They're like, we don't want the bot creators to get a hold of some of the stuff we know. So they'll look at all these signals and go, yep, that's probably a human. If they can't determine, then it'll kick back to the old system with the distorted words. And if you're on mobile, they're going to use the puzzle matching system that's been around for a while. So they'll show you a picture of a kitten. They'll say, pick the other pictures of kittens in the grid, and a lot of pictures of dogs and plants, and easy for you as a human to pick out the kittens, hard for a computer.
Let me play the role of a knee-jerk reacting person who just heard you tell this story.
By all means.
Because I don't actually worry about this. I just want to play that role for a second.
Scott Q. Public, what's your reaction?
You might call it devil's advocate. When they say they can see your mouse movements, that sounds scary to average people just because, what does that mean? They follow me around on the screen. Like, what does it
Scott's
actually?
It's very simple. There's a little camera behind you at all times that you can't see.
I knew it. No, what does it actually do? I assume it's just the browser like the browser grid or whatever, like if you can tell your XY coordinates on a browser.
Your computer knows where your mouse is, right? That's how it knows when you're clicking something. So it's not much different than that. I mean, if you want to get into it, it's probably it's the JavaScript in the box where this checkbox is, tracks your mouse movements, and then just logs them as you're moving around, which is totally normal. The computer, like I said, has to know where your mouse is. So the software has to know where your mouse is too. So it's just paying attention to that data and processing it a little. That's all.
But it is amazing how blasé Google is about saying, oh, we're just going to take other things that we've been tracking the entire time.
The other things they won't admit is where it gets creepy for me. Yeah. Like, what other things are you talking about?
Yeah.
I love that finally we have, there's a good technical reason for photos of kittens on the web.
Right. Well, yeah. No longer is it just for idle entertainment.
It is interesting. Like the press release had photos of turkeys and photos of kittens, but no one ever mentions the turkeys. It's always the kittens.
Yeah,
really? I didn't even know there were turkeys in there.
I didn't either.
There were two examples, and the one with the turkeys in it, there was like turkeys. I ate one of them.
Wait, why turkeys and not like, I don't know, a dog or something? Like what's the, is there a reason?
Well, the dogs are in the kitten one. So you already had dogs covered.
Oh, okay. So
they're just trying to show different examples of the kinds of things that they
like turkeys compared to what exactly?
Other turkeys, I guess. Right.
Well, yeah, there were a couple of times.
It's going to get so difficult. You're going to have to really know your turkeys if you want to get on a site.
Right. I think this is a turkey.
Turkeys and pictures of Thanksgiving food, it looks like.
Is that an old man?
Cranberries and rolls and stuffing.
Is that the old guy from the gym scrotum, or is that a turkey?
Well, you have to remember, the other pictures that aren't the turkey have to look algorithmically similar, but not visually similar to a human. So I guess, like, hilariously, pictures of rolls and stuffing and cranberry sauce look algorithmically similar to pictures.
Oh, this is a good point, because a friend of the program, Will Smith, not the actor, the technology reporter, Will Smith, over at tested.com, speaking of Mythbusters, he says that he believes that this, like the old CAPTCHA system, which was dual purpose, it was a security thing, but it was also a way for Google to crowdsource their algorithm and building that thing out so that they could OCR all the books they were going to do. That was a stated fact. So is this another case of that, Tom, where it's like their image recognition algorithms are only going to benefit from us using this all the time, and the added benefit is we also get
security?
I didn't
admit it, if that's true. That could be.
That was his theory. It was an interesting theory.
Yeah, the smart thing to do would be to somehow get advertising in here. If you could like turn those pictures into advertising, then you'd be killing, you know, two birds with one stone.
Yeah, Butterball presents your access to this website. Exactly.
Yes. Which turkey would you prefer?
Oh, that's good. No, I am 100% sure that they would at least use this data to do something more than just have it. But I don't think it's nefarious.
Well, yeah, because they've kind of given up the reCAPTCHA thing where you're putting in a word that is then used as OCR, right? Because it's now just a checkbox. They're like, I guess what they digitized all the things that they can get out of that. So they're moving on.
Yeah. And if others adopt this, who knows?
CAPTCHA.
Yeah. I hate it too.
I'm just, for some reason, it's kind of like any kind of forms. I panic at any kind of form or exam. And CAPTCHA I never get it right.
It's always like third try for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm always try again.
Yeah. Sometimes you'll find one that you think is pretty good. Like, oh, that looks like a photograph of numbers or something.
Pretty much convinced I'm a bot at this point.
I think I'm actually, I would fail the Turing test.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, let's take this moment now to transition into something that I don't even think David's prepared for, and I hope he's not, because I'm excited. It's the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
All right. It is a chance for us to ask our guests, in this case, David Hewlett, a series of questions to test his knowledge. There's no real reason to win or fail here. It's just for funsies. Tom scores it. I don't know against what, though. What are we scoring it against? Just the average, or I don't remember what we do.
Well, it would just be a score for future reference.
All right,
fair enough. Now that I've explained how I panic at tests.
By the way, we have a test for you.
Yeah, speaking of tests. So if you get it right, you'll hear this. If you get it wrong, you'll hear this. And today's topic, because I know you're a fan, is Doctor Who.
Oh.
Yeah. You were afraid I was going to go, all right, SG-1, go. But,
zero point energy. What? Come
exactly,
on.
Exactly. So here we go. These are 8 questions. I'm going to give them to you now. Tom, you keep score. Here we go. First question. In which story arc does the Doctor go through his first generation? Which story arc?
Story arc?
Yeah.
I haven't a clue.
And I'm going to give you a for that. It is the 10th planet is the story arc. I don't know.
I'm going to give him a point because he did not have a clue. The correct answer.
It was a correct answer. This is how Tom scores this thing. It's super weird.
It sounds vaguely familiar now you say it.
Yeah. Which doctor in the 20th century, or sorry, in the 20th anniversary movie, The Five Doctors, was not played by the original actor?
Sir, repeat that again, please.
So it's which doctor in the 20th anniversary movie, The Five Doctors, that's what it was called, which one of those doctors was not played by the actor who originally played that character?
Oh, would have been the first doctor because he was dead.
You are correct. It was the first doctor, William Hartnell. He passed away in 1975, 8 years before this special aired.
Great. The crotchety old doctor. I love that.
Yeah, that guy's great. Next one.
And dead.
Yeah, he's no longer
still
here.
Dead.
This just in. William Hartnell, still not here. Sixth question. What am I saying? Here's your next question. What candy was the fourth doctor very fond of?
Jelly babies.
You are correct. Nicely done.
I actually have a bag of them, like, beside me.
Like, no right kidding. Now?
Wow. Half point, having a bag near you, bonus.
It's your British heritage, man.
Indeed.
That's what's at play here. Next up, what part of the TARDIS is broken and keeps it looking like a police box?
Oh. Damn it. It's something about the... Oh. It's the chameleon something.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to give it to him. It's the chameleon circuit. I think
that's it. Chameleon circuit.
That's good enough.
Another half.
I was going to say chameleon. Whatever.
If you'd have said just circuit, maybe not. But chameleon, that's the part of the answer. Sure.
The outside part.
Yeah, exactly. Not the gooey inside circuit. All right. Next
delicious
up.
Delicious nougaty scent.
In which episode does the ninth doctor, Christopher Eccleston, regenerate into the 10th doctor, David Tennant?
I'd given up by then, I'm afraid.
Here you go. Sorry. Yes, it is true.
I did the right thing by giving up.
Yeah, you gave up, which is true.
No, that is correct. He did give up. That's true. Is the correct answer.
It is called the parting of ways, ironically.
Yeah.
Next question. What company produced a Doctor Who pinball machine in 1992? You might be able to guess this one.
Midway is the first one that comes to mind.
Well, then you are correct. Bally Midway is correct. Good guess. Here is your final, second to last question. How many seasons did Tom Baker, your favorite doctor, play the fourth doctor?
Oh, was it four?
You are incorrect. It's seven.
Was it seven?
It was seven. Yeah, it was a long time. I only know that he was your favorite because of Wikipedia, which
he is. He was I started watching John Pertwee, and then Tom Baker was the one who got me.
He's the guy, right?
Yeah.
That's what everyone
obviously
says.
Obviously didn't grab me enough, obviously.
Yeah. Well, it just went
so
fast.
I'm going to give you 0.57 of a point because 4 out of 7 is 0.57.
That's very nice. Good math. Your last question is, what is the iconic catchphrase of the Daleks?
Exterminate.
Exterminate. Nicely done.
You will obey.
We look like vacuums, but we're very dangerous. So, Tom, how do you do?
I suck.
Oh, no, this is actually one of the best results we've had. 7.57 points.
Oh, my gosh. That is, you may be the highest scorer.
I'm going to beat myself up on those ones because I should have known many of them.
That was super impressive. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. The end of the pop quiz, which leads me straight into talking about something real quick. Hey, Tom, did you know the tech history calendar that you and I did together?
Yes.
Is going up for 2015 again. So we had one last year.
Wait, so the 2015 dates instead of the 2014 dates.
Yep. And did you know this? It's not just new dates and the same art. It's some of the same art, but mostly brand new cover colors. Actually, it's all different art. Each month we'll have whole different pieces of art.
The same art, but with different colors.
Different art, no. Yeah. So anyway, for those not in the know, we made this calendar. It's also based on the tech history or the year in tech history that Tom did in the book form. Also, we did a monthly version of that and his podcast Today in Tech History. But the art is done by me and the calendar is up for pre-sale over at frogpants.com/store. People can pick that up now. We did the same thing last year. People loved it. We got another one up. But nothing people like more in 2014 than a good paper calendar, I've decided.
It's actually kind of weirdly true.
Yeah. Bringing it back, man. It's like vinyl. Yeah. Everyone loves vinyl.
New art.
I can be looking at you every month of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in fact, we'll send David a free one up there to Canada because I know
you won't be looking at him. You'll be looking at his art.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. You won't see
So it's
me.
Not like Although you guys naked with technology.
No.
No. That, I'm sure that would sell.
Let's make a new one with just Scott's face on everything.
Oh, it's a bad idea. Let's not do that.
Every month.
The worst calendar ever made. All right, it is time for forecast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
This used to be an entire show called Forecast. Now it's called a segment here on this show. It's called Forecast. And David, you piped in with something interesting. It's our chance to predict the future, folks. That's what we do with this piece of the show. And you're talking about disabilities and how one day they may not be a problem anymore. Can you explain kind of where your head's at with that?
Yeah, as I confessed before, it's a little self-serving because this is the topic that I'm sort of exploring with this documentary. But I've got a friend of mine who calls himself Q-Dragon. He has a form of muscular dystrophy, and he's in the process of trying to become a cyborg because, you know, he's saying that there are these technologies out there that will allow him to move in a way that he has never been able to do. I mean, he basically just has movement in his fingers, mm-hmm. And spends all of his time on the internet, and is already this kind of electronic being. And I was just fascinated by his obsession with these technologies and the hope that many of these sort of physical disabilities will be rendered obsolete because of these sort of exoskeletons and bionic eyes. And, you know, this, I just find it absolutely fascinating. So that's what I'm going to be exploring in the next little while. And I just, I think that's just it's one of those things that people are so scared of. People are generally scared of technology. They always see the dark side of technology. And I just love the idea that these robots that have, you know, been taking over the world and destroying mankind and Hollywood for all these years are now becoming a part of people's lives that will allow them to live lives in a way that they haven't been able to before.
And you think there will come a day where, I mean, any real ailment or anything that makes it either hard to walk or hard to see or whatever it may be and whatever severity, that we're going to have some solution technologically anyway to replace that limb, that ability, that sense, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think, you know, the thing that Q says, which I find really interesting, is that, you know, he has a disease. So he's seen as a kid with a disease and, oh, isn't that sad? And, you know, let's just make him as comfortable as possible type thing. Whereas people who are missing limbs or have broken their backs and are unable to walk, we see them and go, oh, we've got to get them back. And, you know, he raises really good points. Like, why do I want to walk? I'd rather have eight legs. Mm-hmm. You know, why do people assume that just because I don't have the use of two legs, that that's what I need? Yeah. We went to, when we were in Australia, in New Zealand, we actually went to visit this company called called Rex Bionics. And we watched this guy who had a spinal injury at around sort of the nipple level. And he hauled himself out of a wheelchair into a set of legs, stood up and walked around a factory.
Wow.
It is the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and there's so many stories like that happening that are real, right? They've gone from being like, scientists think someday, to today, a blind person saw light for the first time, you know, like
basic shapes. And and I think we have this vision of them being, you know, of them being incredibly agile and all this kind of stuff, that we're not where we should be with that stuff. But the reality is, the difference between sitting in a wheelchair and talking to people and living your life and being able to talk eye to eye with people again and to walk is something that is absolutely, life-changing for people.
Do you think that we still face, it feels like some of the greatest areas of places that humans should innovate in and should really reach for and conquer are the ones that are still covered in weird biases. And you kind of alluded to them a little bit, but it reminds me of the difference between, I ended up having to have both my eyes have early cataract surgery because of something that's genetic. Mm. And normally a thing that wouldn't bug somebody till they're 80 happened to me at, you know, 42. And so they took care of it. Everything's great. Modern science saved my eyes. I would be blind without what they did. However, it's seen differently. Like people hear about that and go, oh, well, that's weird. You're weird. You're, you know, you, that shouldn't happen. You're old.
That may not be to do with the eyes.
Right. And well, that's true.
They say it that's more good, than usual.
Yeah, it's a good point. More than usual. It's an important distinction. But then again, if I had said, yeah, this old college football leg, man, just, you know, giving me trouble. Going to have a little knee surgery. Yeah, dude, tough guy, whatever. Like, I feel like there's so much weird bias in medicine, whether it's cancer or MS or some other terrible disease or even small ailment. You know, if it's got to do with your colon, hands off. If it's got to do with your knee, hey, you're a tough guy, even though one may be, you know, as severe or more severe than the other. It's frustrating because I feel like those kinds of things maybe hold back where research money goes or whether or not, you know, the society as a whole may think it's important to focus on one part of the human anatomy or not. And do you feel like that's why we're not there yet? Or is this just the natural way of things?
The thing that I've come up against with this documentary is a number of people who don't want to be a part of it because they don't want their technology to be seen as something that could augment humans. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's okay if they're replacing something or fixing a problem, but the fact that a bionic eye doesn't just give people the ability to see colors and shapes, but could actually make them see better. Or as in the case of Q, talking about, you know, why do I need two legs? Eight legs would do me much better. Yeah. You know, that's scary. They're terrified because they're worried that people will see that as, you know, as an evil or as a, you know, as a potential abuse of technology in some way. And I've never felt that. I feel that, you know, embeddable technology and stuff. I've always been totally fine with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you're right. There's a segment probably of people who would still go, oh, you're desecrating the human form and it's just not right. And I'm like, well, no, if, you know, I'm not saying I want to go out and get elective eight legs put in me, but if I'm somebody who can't, you know, has, you know, no feeling below my waist or something and I need mobility, hell yeah, I want eight legs or I want whatever the thing is that would give me that mobility. And I think you never hear from people who don't face that saying it's the desecration of my body. You hear people who have nothing to worry about say that.
And, and I think that as a human race itself, we're so focused on recreating things in our own form. And I think we have to look beyond that. I mean, we're beginning to start, we're looking into nature for solutions to things. You know, why can't we use those things on our own body? Why can't we, you know, I'm really interested in this whole biohacking thing as well, where the idea of like citizen scientists making changes to DNA
wouldn't it be amazing if the Special Olympics in the future is actually the super capable Olympics where people are allowed to do body modifications and jump crazy high and climb walls like geckos and it's no longer this like, oh, we're having the Special Olympics. It's more like, well, that's the cool one. That's where the amazing stuff happens.
Like when people, but that's absolutely beautiful what you've just said there. I think the idea that we would be striving towards that, we should be striving towards that. Mm-hmm. Instead of like, oh, you're allowed to do certain things that allow you to run faster than other people, but they can't be, you're still being held back by what people see as the norm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's entirely, I think it's really short-sighted and offensive, frankly.
When's this documentary due out? I'm super stoked to watch it.
Honestly, I have no idea because we've just started collecting pieces and we're sort of pursuing some contacts here and there. And then I've got to figure out exactly how to put it together, but that's the next big project for us.
That sounds awesome. That sounds really, really good.
But we want to do it like a science fiction movie. Like I want to be able to do some great special effects and have some fun with it as well. So
I can't wait to see what you come up with.
Let us know. We'll bring you back on and do another episode and we'll talk more about it.
Fantastic.
That's going to do it, everybody. That's our show. David Hewlett, man, what a pleasure it has been. I know you get this at cons and stuff, but it's kind of hard not to nerd out. I was a giant Atlantis fan and I was so stoked when I saw you in that Apes movie and Cube and even like, what was that? Splice? What was that weird alien movie?
Yeah, Splice.
I remember seeing you in that one. Oh yeah, dude. Check it out. Dr. McKay rocking it again. And to have you on here is just a huge treat for us. So huge thanks for being here.
Oh God, anytime, guys. I love it. It's really fun talking to you guys.
Is there anything going on that you would like to mention? Where can people find you online? Any projects coming up? Anything like that?
Honestly, Twitter's the best way to get me.
Cool.
What am I? D. Hewlett.
D. Hewlett is where you're at. Yeah. Easy to find everybody.
To keep people posted on there.
Yeah, and if you could call Netflix and just make an argument for why Atlantis needs to be up on Netflix, that'd be great.
You'd think of anybody, they'd know the numbers on that stuff.
Right,
yeah.
I would love that. All right, awesome. Tom, anything from you today before we go?
Just a couple new stores. You mentioned the calendar already, but the Year in Tech History book is also out there as well. TomEritBooks.com. All the other stuff that I've self-published is there as well.
All right, go check it out. Also, plenty going on at FrogPants.com. We got all kinds of stuff happening, and the store is alive with great deals for Christmas. There are cards up there, all kinds of stuff, so go check it out at FrogPants.com. For this show, as always, you can find us at CurrentGeek.com, at CurrentGeek on Twitter, Scott Johnson and Ace Detect on Twitter. That's me and Tom. CurrentGeek.reddit.com, CurrentGeek@gmail.com, and CurrentGeek.com for everything else. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and for Dave. We'll see you next time.
Cheerio.
Welcome to the Indie Investigations Indie Game of the Week segment. My name is James Bartholomew, and today I'm going to tell you about the one best indie video game released this week. Hi, and welcome to Indie Investigations. My name is James Bartholomew, and today we're going to be looking at a game called iZombie, developed by Awesome Games Studio. I don't know if Awesome Games Studio have the right name for their studio. iZombie is a very typical mobile-esque game. It's basically you have a zombie, and you click on him, and you move him onto other people to turn them into zombies, and you go and chase other people. It's very basic point-and-click little puzzle game. The music's kind of cool, and the art design is nice, but there's nothing there mechanically that's very I forgot how to speak English. It begins with an I. Very innovational. Is that a word? Innovational, yes. My problem with the word innovation goes back to a Disneyland ride called Innoventions, which is a combination of innovation and inventions, so I always have problems thinking up it's a real word. Anyway, back to iZombie. It's one of the very few games where you actually get to play as a zombie and you go and infect humans to try and take over the world, and it's interesting in that it does that. The basic gameplay is you have a zombie and you go and you pick up weaker humans to use them as a massive horde to go and kill stronger humans, like soldiers who have guns. You control them with three buttons on your gamepad, is how I was playing it. You have A, which makes them attack, B, which makes them stop, and X, which makes them follow you. And it's really nifty little kind of like control them kind of thing. But it doesn't have anything more than that. The zombies move. You're supposed to use stealth to get from through levels without to get the smaller, weaker guys so they can kill the bigger guys. But they don't walk fast enough, so it gets very difficult to do that. As well as not really having anything more than that gameplay-wise. It's very singular in its design. There's not a whole lot there that you can do. It's really fun to play if you're in it for like 2 minutes, but you don't want to play a game for 2 minutes. You want to play it for at least half an hour. Especially since this is going to be a game that's not free and it's going to be one you pay money for. You want to pay money for it, you know? So, yeah, it's not a game. iZombie by Awesome Game Studios isn't a game I recommend you play just because it's very basic in its design. And I wouldn't... Well, actually, no. If you can play it for free, I recommend you do so, but I don't recommend you pay money for it because it's a very simple and not very fulfilling game to play. All right, thank you very much for listening. My name is James Bartholomew and at Iagavos on Twitter. You can follow me on my websites, www.initiativecheck.com, and on YouTube, where I produce video-length things for these small segments I do. Also, I'm currently running a Patreon to help me support doing things like this every day. Thank you very much for listening, and have a great week. I'll see you guys later. Bye-bye.
I am at Iagavos on Twitter, and you can find more of this content at www.initiativecheck.com. This was a small segment of Indie Investigations, a podcast that interviews indie game devs about the development process and what it's like to make a game. All my music is written and performed by Johnny Feinstein. You can email indieinvestigations@gmail.com if you have anything you'd like to add or ask. Thank you very much for listening, and have a fantastic week.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there!